Now I'd like to introduce Emily Block, an outstanding VCU MFA student completing her graduate degree this year, and she is also our current Levis Reading Prize coordinator, to introduce our guest of honor this evening, Emily.
Thank you, Greg. Good evening, and thank you everyone for coming out tonight. My name is Emily Block, and now that you've been introduced to two introducers, I will introduce you to the introduction of the next three introductions. Just kidding, I am concluding the introductions. I'm this year's Levis Fellow, and so I've been conferred at least two real honors, first of facilitating reviews for the Levis Reading Prize, and second tonight of briefly introducing Solma Sharif, a former Stegner Fellow, a current lecturer at Stanford University, and winner of the 2017 prize for her debut collection of poems, Look. In an interview following the book's publication, Solmaz made a statement that stuck with me and deepened my understanding of her project. In this interview, a podcast host defined Look as a work of recovery. He was referring, as a lot of this audience knows already, to the recovery of language co-opted in the Department of Defense's Dictionary of Military and Associated Terms. Solmaz said in response that she preferred the word caretaking rather than recovery. Now, her answer, of course, embodies the very care it describes, but besides this, it recalls what I found so striking about Look when I read it last year for the first time, namely that the power and the clarity of vision of this collection could only have emerged from profound care for human life. That inspires Sharif's attention to language, and that's why the poems in Look refuse to turn their gaze from images as stark and true as the sand spilling out the bullet holes or a torso held together by black thread. That's why they are unafraid to speak in the same breath of bombs and the pigeon nests gathering in the quiet engines. As Look proves to anyone who would doubt it, it can't afford not to pay attention, and neither can we. Both political and elegiac, Look illustrates that war is always personal. It gives voice to a diverse chorus who speaks to the horrors of the Iran-Iraq War of the 80s and the US's long military campaign in Afghanistan. Look addresses also the continuity of all wars and the violence inherent in our language and everyday lives. As one speaker contemplates in the poem Free Male, and I'm quoting here, "Love, I've started to say such senseless things. I know where he is coming from, and I'm just doing my job." Solma Sharif confronts these senseless platitudes directly, and so must we as readers. At the rate empire tries to strip words of meaning so that it can operate unquestioned and largely unseen, Solma Sharif's poems work faster, calling out assaults on language that translate literally to lives lost. Time and again, Look underscores that a malleable language orients and shapes the world that language describes, not just elsewhere, but everywhere, even in the most private and intimate of places. Look was named a National Book Award finalist, a Penn Open Book Award finalist, and winner of the Penn Center USA Literary Award in Poetry for its incisive intelligence, poignancy, precision, and for its clear-eyed reckoning with the language of war, which is our language. But also, Look was awarded these prizes and named on so many best book lists because critics and readers agree with the argument behind it. It matters what you call a thing. Everyone, please join me in welcoming Solma Sharif.
Let this be the body through which the war has passed. Frank Bidart.
Drum. Somewhere I did not learn, mow down or mop up. Somewhere I wouldn't hear, your father must come with me or I must fingerprint your grandmother. Can you translate, please? The FBI has my cousin's computers. My father says, say whatever you want over the phone. My father says, don't let them scare you, that's what they want. My mother has a hard time believing anything's bugged. My father and I always talk like the world listens. My father is still on the bus with contraband papers under his seat as uniforms storm down the aisle. It was my job to put a cross on each home with dead for clearing. It was my job to dig graves into the soccer field. I wrote red tracksuit. I wrote Shahida, headless, found beside sad mosque, buried in the same grave as the above. I wrote unidentified fingers, found inside Oldsmobile car. I wrote their epitaphs in chalk. From my son's wedding mattress, I know this mound's his room. I dropped a knee and engaged the enemy. I emptied my clip, then finished the job. I took two steps in and threw a grenade. I took no more than two steps into a room before firing. In Haditha, we cleared homes Fallujah style. My father was reading the Quran when they shot him through the chest. They fired into the closet, the kitchen, the 90-year-old, the stove. Just where was I? Una a una tu cara en todos los pusis hermanos. Here lie the mortal remains of one who in life searched your face. Call me when you get home. Let's miss an appointment together. Let's miss another flight to repeated strip searches. That Haditha bed with magenta queen sheets and wood-shelved headboard and blood splattered up the walls to the ceiling, they held each other. They slept on opposing ends, wishing one would leave. Mother doesn't know who I am anymore. I write, Mustafa Muhammad Khalaf, 15 months old. I write, here lies an unknown murderer, a big security guard with a blue shirt found near an industrial area with a chain of keys. Martyr unknown, only bones. They ask if I have anything to declare, then limit my response to fruits and nuts. An American interrupts an A and B conversation to tell me, you don't have to do anything you don't want to do. He strikes me as a misstep away from, she was asking for it. What did you expect after fishing Popoff from a trash bin? What did you expect after accepting a marble palace? They drag the man who killed my uncle out a hole. They inspect him for ticks on national television. No one in my family celebrates. When the FBI knocks, I tell them, I don't have to do anything I don't want to do, and they get a kick out of that. She just laid there and took it like a champ. She was dying for it. At a protest, a man sells a shirt that reads, my dick would pull out of Iraq. My mother tape records my laugh to mail bubble wrapped back home. My mother records me singing, Yeshab Mahtab, Mahmiya Tuchab. I'm singing the moon will come one night and take me away side street by side street, sitting on a pilled suburban carpet or picking blue felt off the hand-me-down couch, the displaced whatnots. I practice the work of worms, how much I can wear away with no one watching. Two generations ago, my blood moved through borders according to grazing and seasons, then a lifeline of planes. Planes fly so close to my head, filled with bomblets and disappeared men. Scaffolding sprouts nooses sagging with my dead. I burn my finger on the broiler and smell trenches, my uncle pissing himself. Shopping bags are legs, there is half a head in the gutter. I say, hello NSA, when I place a call. Somewhere a file details my sexual habits. Some tribunal may read it all back to me. Golesorhi, I know the cell they will put me in. They put me onto a crooked pile of others to rot. Is this what happens to a brain born into war, a city of broken teeth, the thuds of falling? We have learned to sing a child calm in a bomb shelter. I am singing to her still. It's such a tremendous honor to be here with you all tonight. I can't thank you enough for coming, and I can't thank VCU enough for this honor, and Emily for that beautiful introduction and care. I'm reading from this first book, which is called Look, which is, it's not a rewrite. It is something that deals with the U.S. Department of Defense's Dictionary of Military and Associated Terms, because the U.S. Department of Defense has its own dictionary aimed to supplement standard English dictionary, so words that we use every day are redefined in that dictionary to fit a war context. The title, Look, for example, was redefined by the DoD to mean in mine warfare, the period during which a mine circuit is receptive of an influence. Influence, I'm pretty sure, is the person that steps on the mine in this case. So it gives us a good example of the kind of linguistic acrobatics that are involved and the language that is needed in order to premeditate and excuse violence against others and violence against bodies. There are terms from the dictionary throughout, and I'll read a poem that's called Deception Story. Most of the words in this book that begin with the letter D, for example, are words that are used in the Department of Defense's dictionary, just to give you a sense of the language. Deception Story. Friends describe my disposition as stoic, like a dead fish, an ex said. Distance is a funny drug and used to make me a distressed person, one who cried in bedrooms and airports. Once I bawled so hard at the border, even the man with the stamps and holster said, "Don't cry, you'll be home soon." My distribution over the globe debated and set to quota. A nation can only handle so many of me. Ditching class, I break into my friend's dad's mansion and swim in the Beverly Hills pool in a borrowed t-shirt, a brief diversion. My body breaking the chlorinated surface makes it momentarily my house, my division of driveway gate and alarm codes, my dress rehearsed doctrine of pool boys and ping pong and water delivered on the backs of sequined sparklets trucks. Over here, Dolly, an agent will call out, then pat the hair at your hot black dome. After explaining what she will touch, backs of the hands at the breasts and buttocks. The hand goes inside my waistband and my heart goes dormant, a dead fish, the last female assist I decided to hit on. My life in the American dream is a downgrade, a mere draft of home. Correction, it satisfies as drag. It is snarling what I carve of it alone. Reaching Guantanamo. Letters that are sent to Guantanamo detainees are heavily redacted by the Joint Task Force. So I wrote a series of imagined letters, and I'll just read a few of them. Dear Salim, love, are you well? Do they, you? I worry so much. Lately, my hair, even my skin, the doctors tell me it's, I believe them, it shouldn't. Please don't worry. In the yard, and moths have gotten to your mother's. Remember, I've enclosed some, made this batch just for you. Please eat well. Why did you, me too, remarry? I told, and he couldn't, it. I would never, love, I'm singing that you loved. Remember the line that went, I'm holding the, just for you, yours. Dear Salim, at the store they brought, already bruised on the, but still juicy, I pitted sour all day. The newspaper went with their juice. I save you jars of preserves for your return. Some plums, too. I haven't opened a, since they, you, can't stand all those teeth, or maybe the, how they stain upholstery like. I hope I don't make you me. I hope they allow you some yours. Dear Salim, have made a nest under our, and now the nestlings always, the of eggs has been rice and tea. I don't know who decides things. Yours. Mess hall. Your knives tip down in the dish rack of the replica plantation home. You wash hands with soaps pressed into seahorses and scallop shells, white to match your guest towels, and like an escargot fork, America. You have found the dimensions small enough to break a man, a wet rag, a bullet like a bishop or an armless knight of the Ku Klux Klan, the silhouette through your nighttime window. A quartet plays a song you admire while outside a ring of concertina wire circles around a small collapse. America, Ignore the window and look at your lap. Even your dinner napkins are on fire. So there's a long poem in here called Personal Effects. That's an elegy that I wrote for an uncle that was killed in the Iran-Iraq War. He was a draftee, and I never met him. He died before I was born. But my father told me, I discovered that there was a slim photo album on his body when he died, and there were some letters that he had sent from the front lines. And so I took that material and I tried to kind of piece together a life, or, you know, what an imagined life with him might have been like. And so I'll read just pieces of that one. It's called Personal Effects. Daily I sit with the language they've made of our language to neutralize the capability of low dollar value items like you. You are what is referred to as a casualty, unclear whether from a catalytic or frontal attack, unclear the final time you were addressed, thou beloved. It was for us a catastrophic event, just destroyed, died of wounds received in action. Yes, there was early warning. You said you were especially scared of mortar rounds. In execution planning, they weighed the losses, the sustainability, and budgeted for X number of you. They budgeted for the phone call to your mother and weighed that against the amount saved in rations and your taste for cigarettes and the tea you poured your boys and the tea you would have poured me, approaching, hello, the change you collected in jars, jumping a bit as the family learns to slam the home's various doors. How could she say the things she does not know? A poison-tipped arrow, she told classmates at recess, to the neck. Hollow whistle of it launched from a blowgun, cutting the air between them. According to most definitions, I have never been at war. According to mine, most of my life spent there. Anthrax and salt and pepper shakers, patrol car windshields with crosshairs painted over them, some badge holding my father's pocket contents up to him and asking where the cash is from. The war in Iraq, I read, is over now. The last wheels gathering into themselves as they lift off the sad tarmac. I say begin, I say end, and you are to believe this is what happens. I say chew 40 times before swallowing slime, and you go home to mother, press a dog tag to your temple, press a gun to that, the tag flowering into your skull. Thank God for all-weather floor mats and the slope of my personal driveway and beer cans that change color to let me know they are cold enough. The full-sized cab smelling of iron and Axe body spray. In 2003, a man held a fistful of blood and brains to a PBS camera and yelled, "Is this the freedom they want for us?" It was from his friend's head. They were marching as they figured Americans do. Between them, hardly 3 horsepower, and still we shot him. We say the war is over, but still the woman leans across the passenger seat. My son, I wasn't there, so I can't know, can I? His mother's bed, a grief we don't attempt to console. I killed him, she'll tell me years later. Fuck celestial guidance. I killed him, she'll say. In the midst of civil affairs, he surprises, he arrives, eyes taped shut, torso held together by black thread, fridge cold. Grief is a closed area, cluttered with his fork against the plate and other forgotten musics. The enlarged ID photo above her mantle means I can know Amu, my dear collateral damage, as only a state or a school might do. He was, we hope, moved. Moved, but we will have to guess by what. Shampoo in her wet hair, salty and fried breads, the chase scene and bullet, Sangak fresh from the oven, dampening the newspaper on the walk home from the baker's, the arms of someone who smells nice to him in the morning, the mouth of someone laced with cardamom who dances in the kitchen and lets whatever's on the stove burn, who burns for him, and beside him they burned, they boiled, they fell, shortly after a loud sound that makes him piss himself. Being nice to others, loose change, chess. He could beat all the brothers in chess. He was moved like that across a minefield, moved by a hand we cannot see, a hand that is all our hands combined.
The first two lines of this poem are lifted from a translation of Ovid's Ibis poem, which is a long curse poem that he wrote when he was in exile and is very elaborate in its cursing and curses. And I like the ghost of that kind of haunting this poem, so that's why I open with it. It's called Desired Appreciation. Until now that I've reached my 30s, all my muse's poetry has been harmless, American and diplomatic. A learned helplessness is what psychologists call it, my docile desired state. I've been largely well-behaved and gracious. I've learned the doctors learned of learned helplessness by shocking dogs. Eventually, we things give up. Am I grateful to be here? Someone eventually asks if I love this country. In between the helplessness, the agents, the nation must administer a bit of hope, must meet basic dietary needs, ensure by tube, by nose, by throat, by other orifice, must fist bump a janitor, must muss up some kid's hair and let him loose around the Oval Office. Click, click, could be cameras or the teeth of handcuffs closing to fix the arms overhead. There must be a doctor on hand to ensure the shoulders do not dislocate, and there must be Prince's raspberry beret. Click, click, could be Morse code tapped out against a coffin wall to the neighboring coffin. Outside my window, the snow lights cobalt for a bit at dusk, and I'm surprised every second of it. I had never seen the country like this. Somehow I can't say yes. This is a beautiful country. I have not cast my eyes over it before, that is, in this direction, is how John Brown put it when he looked out from the scaffold. I feel like I must muzzle myself, I told my psychiatrist. So you feel dangerous, she said. Yes. So you feel like a threat. Yes. Why was I so surprised to hear it? If it's all right, I'm going to use that poem to transition into new work. In the course of writing that poem, I wrote that poem actually after the U.S. Senate report on torture came out. And in the course of researching the CIA's torture program and discovering that the psychologists, so to speak, that were behind the design of it had started or based their design really on an offshoot of psychology or a school of psychology known as positive psychology, I got really interested in the kinds of psychologies and the modes of psychology that have asked us to change the language that we use to describe the world around us, in order to make the world around us more tolerable and pleasant, and in order also to make us more pleasant in that world around us. So this poem that I'll read now opens with two examples of little tweaks that you find. Like, if you want to get this thing, word it this way, you know, how to win friends and influence people kind of speech. And so it opens with two concrete examples of that, and it's called Social Skills Training. Studies suggest, how may I help you, officer, is the single most disarming thing to say, and not what's the problem. Studies suggest it's best the help reply, my pleasure, and not no problem. Studies suggest it's best not to mention problem in front of power, even to say there is none. Gloria Steinem says women lose power as they age, and yet the loudest voice in my head is my mother. Studies show the mother we have in mind isn't the one that exists. Mine says, what the fuck are you crying for? Studies show the baby monkey will pick the fake monkey with fake fur over the furless wire monkey with milk without contest. Studies show to negate a thing is to think it anyway. I'm not sad. I'm not sad. Studies define assertiveness as self-respect cut with deference. Enough, the wire mother says. History is a kind of study. History says we forgave the executioner before we mopped the blood. We asked, Lord, Judge, have I executed well? Studies suggest yes. What the fuck are you crying for, officer? The wire mother teaches me to say. While studies suggest, Solmaz, have you thanked your executioner today? Last poem. Thank you. Lay down to sleep then, to rest last night, to waste before, across a stretcher, across a shoulder, over a leg, beneath an arm, in a shroud, in a crib, on top of a car, chained to a bumper, beneath a bridge, in town square, in the fountain, in the Tigris, under water boiled from smart bombs, in a cellar, in back seat, counting street lamps strobing overhead, under bomblets, under tendrils of phosphorus, in a burnt silhouette, on a cot, under a tent, still holding your breath, beneath a dining table, beneath five stories, in a hole.
Thank you.